A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You know that moment when you're patting your pockets and the blood just drains from your face? Daniel had it at passport control in Greece. He and Hannah and Ezra are coming back from the States. They get to the booth and the passport isn't where it's supposed to be. He'd left it in the seat back pocket on the plane.
Oh, I've done that exact pocket pat. It's never the passport, but the feeling is the same. This cold certainty that something irreplaceable just vanished.
Right. And he's got maybe seconds to act, so he gets the gate agents to search the plane. Tight turnaround, not an easy ask, and they find it. Happy ending. But while they're waiting, Anna's on ChatGPT asking what they'd do if it didn't turn up, and the Greek border officer confirms the obvious, no passport, no entry. So Daniel's question is, what actually happens to the people who don't get the happy ending? Is there a standard procedure? How do you contact your embassy from the wrong side of the border? And he's asking this. Did he miss his chance to become a real-life Tom Hanks and get stuck in an airport?
The terminal question. We have to address that.
We do. And we called someone who's been on the ground for this exact situation. So let's trace the whole thing. From the moment you can't produce the document, through the holding area, to the emergency passport pipeline, and finally to why Tom Hanks is a fantasy.
Here's the thing people don't appreciate. This isn't some freak one-in-a-million accident. It's a predictable failure mode in a system that processes billions of passengers a year. The question isn't whether this happens. It's how the machinery handles it when it does.
And Daniel's scenario is actually the most constrained version. Losing your passport before you reach the border is one thing. You're still in the country. You can go to your embassy, get photos taken, wait a few days. Losing it at the border itself, at the passport control desk, is the highest stakes version. You're in the no man's land between arrival and admission.
That's exactly the right way to put it. Border control is a binary gate. You present a valid document or you don't. There's no let me just explain loophole, and the officer at the desk isn't there to adjudicate sob stories. Their job is to enforce that binary. The Greek officer who told Daniel he couldn't pass through without a passport, that wasn't him being inflexible. That's the entire function of the role.
So you're standing there, no passport, and the gate is closed. What happens next? Because it's not what most people picture.
No, it's not. You don't get turned away politely and sent back to the terminal to figure things out. You get moved to what's called a secondary inspection area. And this is important. It's not a holding cell, it's not a detention center, but it's a secure zone. You're technically not in the country yet. Your immigration status at that moment is, and this is the actual term used in some jurisdictions, in limbo.
Which sounds like a legal thriller, but is really just the bureaucratic way of saying you're in a chair behind a glass door.
And the officer's first move isn't to call your embassy or start deportation paperwork. It's to verify your identity through other means. This is where the system gets surprisingly resourceful. The passport is the primary document, but it's not the only data point they have on you.
What else can they pull?
Several things. If you came from a country that requires a visa, they've already got your biometrics, fingerprints, facial recognition data from the visa application. If you entered through an e-gate that scanned your face, that scan is stored. They can pull the airline manifest, which has your name, date of birth, and passport number. Even if the physical document is gone, the number exists in the system. They can contact your departure point and have the authorities there pull your exit scan. The passport is the key, but there are a lot of ways to confirm who you're without it.
And if they can confirm your identity?
That's the worst case scenario, and we'll get there. But in most cases, identity gets confirmed within the first hour. Once that happens, the process shifts into what's called document recovery mode. The airline gets contacted immediately.
This is the part Daniel experienced in real time. The gate agent searching the plane.
And there's a reason they actually did it. Airlines have a lost and found procedure specifically for passports found during cabin sweeps. They know exactly where to look, seat back pockets, between seat cushions, under the seat in the aisle. But the clock matters enormously here. If the plane has already departed for its next leg, that passport is now in another country, and recovery becomes exponentially harder.
What's the typical turnaround window where this actually works?
If the plane is still at the gate, you've got maybe 15 to 20 minutes before the cleaning crew gets on and the cabin gets turned over. After that, anything found goes to the airport's central lost and found, which can take hours to process, if the plane has already pushed back. Gone. The passport is now in whichever city that aircraft is heading to, and you're dealing with two airports, two jurisdictions, and an item that may or may not get logged properly at the other end.
So, Daniel's quick thinking. Asking for the search immediately. That's what made the difference between a 5-minute recovery and a multi-hour ordeal.
And he probably didn't realize this at the time, but the gate agents had their own reasons to help. But I'll let Hilbert get into that later.
All right. So the plane search fails, or the plane is already gone. The passport is lost for good. Now what?
Now the embassy or consulate liaison kicks in. Every major international airport has a designated diplomatic liaison office. It's usually a desk or a phone line staffed by the host country's foreign ministry, not your embassy directly. Their job is to connect you with your country's consular services. The traveler is allowed to contact their embassy, and the embassy can issue what's called an emergency passport.
And this isn't some rare, exceptional thing they do as a favor.
Not at all. The U.S. State Department issues roughly 400,000 emergency passports per year globally. That's about 1,100 per day. The U.K. issues about 50,000 emergency travel documents annually. This is a routine back-office function, not a crisis response. Every embassy has the forms, the printer, and the laminator ready to go.
1,100 a day. So while you're standing there feeling like the unluckiest person in the world, you're actually just today's ticket number in a very well-oiled machine.
And the timeline is faster than most people expect. If the embassy is in the same city as the airport, which it usually is for capital cities and major hubs, an emergency passport can be issued in 2 to 4 hours. If the embassy is in a different city, it's usually overnight. During that window, the traveler stays in the secondary inspection area.
Not a hotel. Not the terminal. Not a lounge.
No. You're technically under border control supervision. You haven't been admitted to the country, so you can't leave the secure zone. You're in a kind of legal waiting room. You can use a bathroom, you might get water, but you're not going to duty-free and you're not getting a coffee. You're in the country's custody until the document situation is resolved.
And what does this actually cost?
It varies wildly by country. A U.S. emergency passport is $165 plus a $60 execution fee, so $225 total. The U.K. charges about £100. Australia is around 200 Australian dollars. Canada is 110 Canadian dollars. Germany charges about 100 euros. Some countries charge nothing at all. It's considered a basic consular service. But you also need passport photos, which the airport may or may not have facilities for. Some secondary inspection areas have a photo booth. Most don't. You might be escorted to a photo machine in the terminal under supervision.
$225 and a few hours in a chair behind glass. That's the price of losing your passport at the border. Honestly, cheaper than I expected.
The financial cost isn't the real penalty. It's the cascade. You miss your connecting flight, and airlines rarely rebook without a valid passport. Even if you have an emergency one being processed, until it's physically in your hand, you're not getting on a plane. Hotel reservations get canceled. If your visa was tied to the physical passport, and some countries still do this, stamping the visa into the passport pages, the emergency passport doesn't have that visa, so you might need a new one. Travel insurance often covers the emergency passport fee, but it doesn't cover the lost vacation time or the missed connection costs.
So that's the immediate sequence. Identity verification, document recovery, embassy liaison, emergency passport, supervised waiting. But how common is this really, and what are the odds it happens to you?
The 400,000 U.S. emergency passports per year is the best proxy we have, and that's just one country. Not all of those are airport losses. Some are stolen, some are lost in the city, some are damaged. But a significant portion are at ports of entry. The UK's 50,000 emergency travel documents annually tells a similar story. Scale that across all the passport-issuing countries in the world, and you're looking at millions of these incidents per year.
So the border officer who helped Daniel, he's probably handled this exact situation dozens of times, maybe hundreds.
Almost certainly. For him, it was Tuesday. For Daniel, it was the travel nightmare. And that disconnect between the individual's panic and the system's routine is actually the whole story here. The system is designed to be invisible when it works. You never see the secondary inspection area, the embassy phone line, the emergency passport printer. The moment you need it, you realize it was always there.
And if you're stateless, or your country doesn't have an embassy in that country?
That's where it gets difficult. If identity can't be verified, or if the traveler has no embassy to contact, stateless persons, people with disputed nationality, refugees traveling on convention travel documents, they enter a different process entirely. The default becomes removal to the last port of departure. Under IATA rules, the airline that brought you is legally obligated to return you if you arrived without valid documentation. They have to fly you back on their own aircraft at their own expense.
Which brings us to the question Daniel really wanted answered. Could you actually get stuck in an airport? Is the terminal real?
No, it's a fantasy. And I want to be precise about why, because this is the single biggest misconception people have about this whole topic. Airports are designed to process people through, not to hold them indefinitely. The legal framework doesn't allow for stuck in the airport as a permanent state. You're either admitted to the country, returned to your point of origin, or transferred to a formal detention facility. No one sleeps in the food court for months.
But there was a real guy, the one the movie was based on.
Mehran Karimi Nasseri. He lived in Terminal 1 of Charles de Gaulle Airport from 1988 to 2006, 18 years. But his case had nothing to do with a lost passport. He was a stateless Iranian refugee who had been expelled from multiple countries. His legal limbo was about asylum status and the fact that no country would accept him. He was legally allowed to remain in the transit zone because he had nowhere to be removed to. That's a diplomatic stalemate between nations, not a misplaced document.
So Daniel wasn't one lost passport away from living in the Athens airport food court.
Not even close. If that passport hadn't been found on the plane, he'd have spent a few hours in secondary inspection, called the Irish Embassy in Athens, or possibly the Israeli one, depending on which passport he was traveling on, gotten an emergency document, and been on his way by evening. The system would have processed him. That's what it does.
And yet everyone who's seen the terminal secretly wonders if it could happen to them.
Because the airport feels like a liminal space. You're between countries, between jurisdictions. It's easy to imagine slipping through the cracks, but the cracks aren't where people think they are. The real vulnerability isn't the lost passport. It's the stateless person, the disputed nationality, the refugee whose documents no country recognizes. Those are the people who get stuck, not the tourist who left his passport in seat 14C.
Let's talk about the ChatGPT angle. Because this is a detail in Daniel's story that I think is worth unpacking. Hannah's mid-crisis, waiting to see if the passport gets found, and she asks ChatGPT what they'd do. What did it get right, and what did it miss?
The research on this is interesting. AI models give broadly reasonable general advice for this scenario. Contact your embassy, ask for an emergency passport, report the loss to the local police. That's all correct. But they miss the airport-specific procedures that actually matter in the moment. They don't tell you about the secondary inspection zone. They don't mention the airline liaison or the biometric verification options. They don't explain that you're not going to a hotel while you wait.
The advice is correct, but incomplete. It tells you the destination, but not the route.
That's actually a good metaphor for how AI handles a lot of procedural questions. It knows the broad strokes, the things that are well documented on government websites and travel blogs. But the ground-level mechanics, the stuff that only someone who's worked in an airport or been through the process would know, that's not in the training data in the same way.
The secondary inspection chair behind the glass door. The fact that you can see the duty-free shop but can't get to it.
Right. No travel blog is writing about the chair.
Before we wrap, Hilbert has a story that puts a different spin on Daniel's experience, and I think it changes how you read the whole thing.
You know, the one thing nobody mentions is that the airline is the one who really loses in this situation. If you arrive without a passport, the airline gets fined, sometimes thousands of dollars. And they have to fly you back on their own plane, at their own cost. So those gate agents who searched the plane for Daniel's passport, That wasn't them being nice. That was them trying to avoid a $5,000 fine.
Wait, the airline is financially liable for a passenger's missing document?
Under IATA rules, yes. The carrier is responsible for ensuring passengers have valid travel documents before boarding. If you show up at the other end without one, the assumption is the airline didn't check properly at departure. So they eat the fine and the return flight.
That completely reframes Daniel's story. He thought the gate agents were helping him out of kindness. They were protecting their bottom line.
Both things can be true. They want to help, and they don't want to pay. The incentive lines up. But yeah, the urgency, the will search the plane even with a tight turnaround, that's the fine talking.
How much are we talking? You said thousands.
Depends on the country. I've seen fines from $2,000 up to $10,000 per passenger. The US is on the higher end. The EU varies by member state. But no airline wants that on their ledger, so they'll tear a plane apart looking for a passport before they let you walk up to the border control desk without one.
You know this because...
I worked 2 summers at Frankfurt Airport. Early 2000s. Terminal Services Agent. The job was mostly reuniting passengers with lost items. Laptops, jackets, the occasional prosthetic leg. But when someone showed up at passport control without documents, I was the one who walked them to the Bundespolizei office.
The secondary inspection area?
It wasn't a room. At Frankfurt, it was a row of chairs in a corridor behind a glass door. You could see the duty-free shop. People would ask to buy a coffee, and the officer would say no. You're not in the country yet. That sentence. You're not in the country yet. I must have heard it 100 times.
The legal limbo Herman was describing. You saw it firsthand.
Every shift. And here's what sticks with me. Most people were calm. Not because they weren't scared. They were terrified. But once they understood there was a process, that someone was making phone calls, that an embassy would issue a document, they settled into it. The panic is the not knowing. Once you know the shape of the next 4 hours, it's just waiting.
Did you ever see someone who couldn't be processed? Someone who actually got stuck?
Once. Iranian man. His travel documents had been revoked mid-flight. The Iranian government had canceled his passport while he was in the air. He landed in Frankfurt with no valid documents and no country that would take him back. He was in that corridor for 11 days before they transferred him to a formal detention facility. That's the closest I ever saw to a real terminal situation, and it wasn't a lost passport. It was a government disowning its own citizen at 30,000 feet.
11 days in a corridor behind glass.
He was remarkably patient about it, taught me how to play backgammon. I still have the board. It's in a box somewhere.
That case, the revoked passport mid-flight, that's the real nightmare scenario. Not losing the document, but having your own government invalidate it while you're in the air. There's no embassy that can help you, because your own embassy just made you stateless.
Which is why the Tom Hanks question always annoys me. The movie makes it seem like airports are these magical limbo zones where you can just live. They're not. They're processing machines. If you're in one for more than 24 hours, something has gone catastrophically wrong at the diplomatic level. It's not about a missing passport.
Daniel's fantasy of getting stuck in an airport, he'd have been bored and uncomfortable for maybe 6 hours, then on his way with an emergency passport. The system was always going to catch him.
The system catches almost everyone. That's what it's built for. The people it doesn't catch. Those are the ones you read about. Because they're so rare, they become movies.
The misconception. Here's the one that's been running through this whole discussion. People think losing your passport at the border means you're stuck in the airport indefinitely, like Tom Hanks. The reality is you're either admitted, returned to your departure point, or transferred to formal detention. You don't stay in the terminal. The airport isn't a place where you get stuck. It's a place where you get processed.
The second misconception, that border authorities have no way to verify your identity without the physical passport. Between biometric data, airline manifests, and consular verification, there are multiple fallback options. The passport is the primary key, but it's not the only one.
The third one worth naming, that emergency passports are a last resort that takes days. They can be issued in hours if the embassy is nearby. The machinery is cold, but it works.
Here's what I keep thinking about. As biometric exit systems become more common, facial recognition at gates, digital travel credentials stored on your phone, will the physical passport become less critical? Or will losing your phone become the new nightmare?
That's the question, isn't it? Right now, the passport is the single point of failure. But if that single point moves to your phone, which can run out of battery, get smashed, get stolen, we might be trading one vulnerability for another. At least a passport doesn't need charging.
Daniel's panic was real, and anyone who's traveled has felt some version of it. But the system was always ready for him. The secondary inspection area, the embassy phone line, the emergency passport printer, all of it sitting there waiting, handling thousands of cases just like his every single day. He didn't miss out on becoming Tom Hanks. He just got the normal outcome.
Which is, when you think about it, the better outcome. The movie is a fantasy. The processing machine is real.
If you have a weird prompt, a travel nightmare, a bureaucratic mystery, a question about how the world actually works, send it to show at myweirdprompts.com. We'll do the research so you don't have to.
Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for keeping the show running, and for the backgammon story we're definitely coming back to.
This has been My Weird Prompts. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.